Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right State Auditor John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
And
Let it snow.
Oh, yeah. April snowstorms. And then on the political left, Shireen Gurbani.
Hello and hi, listeners. I hope you're doing well.
It's a highlight of my week when I get to spend time with the two of you.
Well, thank you.
We're friends.
It's a joy to see you.
Oh, you're nice. I just learned so much, and we've been talking off air just like, how do we talk about this week and the indictment of former President Donald Trump? I don't know how it came across to the two of you. I happened to be working from home the last couple of days, and I saw things, right? I saw the plane landing at LaGuardia. You know, I saw the president get off. I saw his entourage get off. Yesterday, I heard some of the things live as they were taking place, but I'm just stunned. And that's my initial reaction is just, what is going on? So, Shireen and John, let's do this twofold. Let's first just get some general reactions, throw some things out there, and then I want to ask you this blank page idea of how you're feeling. So, Shireen, I'm stunned.
So, I would say the attention in my house was divided. My husband could not get enough of it. Was like, did you see this? And then this happened, and then this happened, and here's what's going on now. And he's like, the plane landed, all this kind of
stuff. Talk about reality TV, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I could not be less interested. And I do think that there's a deep cultural, political, historic, like all of those things are happening right now. I'm just so tired of this person and what he's come to represent for the body politic.
Mm-hmm. John?
I guess I'm with Shireen. I largely couldn't care less about what was going on and stuff like that. I get the dynamic, which is
unprecedented, incredible.
Unprecedented. But you look at the dynamic, which is okay to have a former president, you know, indicted. You know, is troubling in and of itself. And there's different dynamics at play. And you look at the one dynamic, which is, okay, it does look like the prosecutor was trying to throw everything against the wall to come up with something that would stick. When you look at the 34 charges, it kind of looks like weak tea. But then you also have the dynamic, you know, if these are truly misdemeanors, then go after them as misdemeanors. If that is really what the appropriate thing is, it looks like he's stretching, trying to leverage them into felonies to make a bigger deal out of that. But I also hate the dynamic, which is I do not think Trump is the future of the Republican Party. And so having to sit here and defend his behavior in the past is a very difficult thing.
Yeah. So we had let's just take, you know, this week when the actual arraignment happened, it started with a defeated former president, not saying much, looking down, the photographs in the courtroom don't look, you know, encouraging, right? He just looks like a defeated man.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the day, he's at Mar-a-Lago in front of his crowd and just spitting venom.
Yep. Back to the typical grievance. Of course, he brings up Hillary Clinton, half an hour of lies. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you've got fundraising calls. You got a fake mugshot.
On a T-shirt to raise money. It's like,
come on. You've got all the, you know, campaign connections here. And then you've got the timeline, which doesn't put us back in court until December of this year, which means, and that's just an appearance.
Yeah.
And then the trial wouldn't begin until in 2024.
Yeah.
John.
Yeah, I mean, I think the prosecutor wants to have a trial in January. I think the judge, as I understand, alluded to that's pretty aggressive, which says it will probably be later, which means, okay, if we're talking 2024, campaign cycle, it's likely going to get pushed off later in that process because trying to hold a trial when somebody's campaigning just seems like it's going to be viewed as extremely unfair.
Well, so I'm making the shape of a pyramid with my hands and showing them to my colleagues, but I'm thinking of the tip of the iceberg. And I'm thinking, okay, so we got this one, but we know there's more coming.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be an iceberg being revealed or, you know, a piling up of cans or something. Shireen, do you see it the way I do, that all this is going to do is crescendo?
I think that's right. This is one of many, you know, legal troubles that former President Trump is in, and potentially not even the most serious, right? When I think about the insurrection, as a reminder.
Yeah, assault on democracy.
An assault on democracy, calling up Georgia and asking for the 11,000 votes that he needed, which would be also, I think, under most circumstances, we believe that that would not be allowed, right? Mm-hmm. And then just you know, don't forget about the document, like on and on and on. I feel like, but this is also a legacy of a human being who has been right up against the edge of the law for a very long time and has an incredible record of running out the clock to avoid consequences for his behavior.
Mm-hmm. I encouraged both John and Shireen to just think for a minute and do a what I call a blank page exercise, but where you tune out all the noise and all the things you've been reading and you just stop and you breathe deep and you take out a pen and you have an 8.5 by 11 sheet in front of you and you write down what is your core telling you? Mine, pretty quickly, I'll say it. My strongest emotion is I just want this national nightmare to end. I'm so fatigued by it. It's not becoming of our nation, and it's very dangerous domestically, internationally. Second is I just feel this need for courage. We have a demagogue here, and our country doesn't have a great history of dealing with demagogues. I'm thinking of, the McCarthy period. I'm thinking of George Wallace.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of times when you knew that something was wrong and you needed people to stand up and take it down. I'm speaking here about the Republican Party, John, right? I mean about people of influence who have patriotism and put self-interest aside and they say this is enough's enough. We need a new turn a page. And then lastly, I got to come to you guys, but I want people to be a builder. And so in every aspect of your life, what is it I need to do to tune out the noise and build?
Yeah.
Shireen, your white page.
So I made some notes. And for me, at the core of this, I believe that no one is above the law, not even a former president. Mm-hmm. And when someone breaks the law, they should face repercussions for that. I think they should be fair. They should be just. It should be transparent. But you should face repercussions for what you do. And I just don't think that there should be one justice system for everyday Americans, mm-hmm. right? And another for the rich and powerful, where they pay no consequences for their crimes. And I know, John, I hear you saying these are trumped up charges. I mean, pun intended.
No, I said they sound like misdemeanors.
Misdemeanors. Under state law in New York, this kind of charging of a white collar crime is common. It happens frequently. So if this is...
Because it's the financial capital of the world.
Right.
You have to set high standards.
So I just don't think anyone should be above the law.
What's your white page, John?
Well, I need to respond to that.
Okay,
go ahead.
My key thing, first of all, is I said it sounds like he's stretching to try and leverage them into felonies when they're really misdemeanors. So I was not saying they don't sound like crimes. I said they sound like misdemeanors and should be prosecuted as such. When I look at the broader dynamic, though, Natalie, I'm with you. To me, America is building a better future. That is the American dream. It's something better for you individually, your family, your community. It's yes, we go through these cycles, mm-hmm. but ultimately it's about a better future. And I look at this dynamic and I get that a lot of those that support Trump view him as a fighter, okay? And so this feeds his victimization. And so they're gonna see him as being unfairly picked on and he's fighting back mm-hmm. against the system. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, at the end of the day, when it comes to America as a whole, when it comes to the Republican Party, it's a distraction of building that better future.
Mm-hmm. So the theme to me is I'm looking for courage out there. And I want to share a quote. Timothy Nifalli, he's a presidential historian, did a lot with Nixon. But he said about Trump and this indictment, he dares us all. His approach is not to explain what he did and accept that he made errors, but to tear down the system that dared challenge him. I think it captures it. The guy is trying to tear down our institutions, tear down our guidelines, our, you know, protocols, the things that we hold dear, and someone's got to have the courage to step up and put it to a stop.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's the transition there, you guys?
Well, the other thing is ultimately at the end of the day, the Republican Party, those folks that are running for office or other things like that are going to spend a huge amount of time talking about Donald Trump and these charges and whether they're credible or not and other things like that, rather than what is the future platform? Mm-hmm. What do they want to do as president?
Yeah.
And so it will taint the process, if you will. It will undercut the process of what we're looking for and spend, like I said, way too much time on this topic.
Yeah. Shireen and John, I just one more thing. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints had their general conference this weekend. The prophet spoke out to his fold. I encourage our listeners to give a listen. His talk was called Peacemakers Needed. It was pretty interesting to see a religious leader commenting on things that are needed in our society right now. And I think it's worth noting. Okay. We've got just a minute or two left in this part of the program. Let's talk about Finland, formally joining NATO. Shireen?
So this is a blow, I think, to Russia, right? Mm-hmm. Russia shares a border, 800-mile border with Finland. Finland, at the beginning of the Russian aggression, the entrance into Ukraine, said that they were interested in joining NATO, and that has formally occurred. I think this is good. I like to see nations coming together in this way. But the Kremlin is certainly, I think, in a position to, probably act out in retaliation.
Yeah. You like this, John?
Well, I have questions and concerns about NATO. I think this is a good step. Clearly, if Finland is looking what happened with Ukraine and Russia's aggression there, they want to do something that's going to help protect them, their country. We see Sweden also considering joining NATO. Currently, I think it's Hungary and Turkey are expressing concerns about that. But if you're out there, a neighbor of Russia, I think you have to take steps proactively to protect yourself from Russian aggression.
With what we've seen. Another thing that amped up the U.S.-Russian relations is this Wall Street Journal reporter that's been detained, Evan Kurskovich. Is this a Brittany Griner redo, John?
Well, no, because Brittany actually committed a crime. Evan, he's just a reporter. He's out there doing his job, reporting. He's accused of being a spy. And part of the troubling thing is when this happened back in the 80s, we were quick to start ejecting diplomats and other people we suspected of spying in the U.S. that were Russians. Other than calling for the release of this reporter, I haven't seen the administration do much of anything other than that. We should be ejecting Russians from our country as a consequence of this egregious action by Putin and his government.
Meanwhile, Shireen, didn't Russia just take over the top role with the at the UN on the National Security Council?
I think that's right. Yeah. So let's just say tense times, certainly. And to your point, though, we could certainly understand how Brittany Griner has become a convenient point of contention for people on the right. They accused her of a crime, and they're accusing him of a crime, too, right? And I think what's ultimately happening here is that we have a system that is largely unjust for Americans, and it's unsafe for people to be in Russia, certainly journalists and many others.
Yeah, lots of news this week. Stay tuned for our next segment.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorpani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. Lots of news this week. Let's do a little bit of a lightning round. Start with you, Shireen, on this Wisconsin election.
Your time's up.
The new Supreme Court Justice, call her Judge Janet. She has a difficult last name, but I guess 22 states elect their members of the Supreme Court. That was foreign to me.
Yes.
I think of them as like nominations from a governor.
Yes. And while this is a nonpartisan race, it certainly was quite partisan in the end. And the Supreme Court now in Wisconsin will be three conservative members and then three liberal members. And
split.
I think her last name is Protasiewicz. One, campaigning on abortion access, right? So what Wisconsin is headed towards is likely, to hear cases on abortion access in their state, on gerrymandering. This could be a critical turning point for the future of Wisconsin in terms of Democratic stability. Now, it's interesting to me because it's also the most expensive state Supreme Court case that that we've ever seen. Lots of dollars came in, especially at the end, to support the Republican. But I think that what we see here is that this is going to be a defining, specifically, reproductive health access, abortion access, is going to be an issue that continues into these next and upcoming elections.
Yeah, John, you've got the post Roe v. Wade world, and it sends all these earthquakes all around the country.
And my understanding is Wisconsin has an abortion law that goes back to the 1800s.
Yeah.
So when Roe v. Wade was struck down, it reverts back to that. And so it was.
And other states are just doing that based on ideology.
and it was odd or troubling from my perspective to hear, a judge, and she won, but talking so much in advance of her view that this was unconstitutional and this should be struck down and other things like that. I mean, that sounds like you're a governor. That sounds like you're a legislator. That does not sound like a judge when you're predisposed to say how you're going to rule on a case that's likely going to be before you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just abortion. She was also talking about the maps that were drawn for
gerrymandering,
for congressional seats and legislative seats and other things like that.
Well, it got a lot of national news. From the political middle, I just find it very odd, even if it's non-political, nonpartisan, that they elect members of the Supreme Court. I like the arm's length, letting the governor make a nomination, have it be Senate confirmed. That would be my preferred way of organizing that. John, we also had the mayor of Chicago election, two Democrats in the final, one that was very pro, taking on crime, and another one, Brandon Johnson, who won, was a teacher and a union guy. That got news as well.
They got news, clearly, from everything I hear, Chicago is not a great place in terms of, safety and security and other things like that. There's a lot of troubling dynamics in Chicago. Clearly, the teachers union, as I understand, had an upcoming union negotiation going on. And so getting their guy in place may help facilitate those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to say anything?
What's happening is that there's quite a bit of, this discourse. Like, Chicago has a long history of gun violence. It just does, right? And there have been certainly in this national kind of conversation that we're having around crime and safety, I think it's really interesting that it seems to me that more conservative members, even of Democratic parties, will come out with this sort of anti-crime message. And what is interesting to me is that it doesn't seem to be sticking. It didn't stick in Arizona. That was part of the our last election cycle conversations happening there. I think broadly, it didn't work against Joe Biden. I don't think this is a winning message, especially when we see that overall in the United States, crime is down. Certain kinds of crime are up, but crime is largely down.
Mm-hmm. Locally, we had the Hinckley Institute Deseret News poll come out recently where they actually asked people, what do you think about the legislative session? Who has more power, the governor or the legislature? Let's just talk about the legislative session first. 54% of the voters polled gave the GOP-controlled legislature a thumbs up. John? 54%. Only 9% felt strongly, so it was kind of you did okay.
Yeah, it was fine and stuff like that. So I think generally people are happy with what's going on. They're happy with the economy in Utah, other things like that. And so, you didn't agitate us, so fine.
Shereen,
thumbs up.
One-third disapproved of the legislature's performance. It was such a consequential session where they did so many things. Usually when you do things you create waves.
Yeah.
Leadership sometimes challenges people. Were you surprised that they were so, positive about the legislature?
No, because I think that generally if you ask people to start outlining major legislation that was passed at their state level, they would not be able to do it. Listeners, I know that that's not you. You would be able to tell us a nice laundry list of things that happened. But I
feel
like
they get annoyed that we're not detailed enough.
I do feel like that they're, your general person really doesn't have a strong sense. Mm-hmm. And when individual issues were polled, everything from further restricting abortion access to taking, public dollars and putting them into private schools to even the way that the tax cut rolled out, benefiting, frankly, our richest Utahns. Mm-hmm. That is not something when you ask Utahns about those specific things that they like.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So I can't say
that. Disconnect.
Yeah, disconnect.
The same poll found that Utahns are split over whether legislative leaders or the governor have the most influence in the state. It was like 34% choosing legislative leaders as dominant and 34% choosing the governor. I'll mention, as someone who worked in the governor's office, I think, for like 18 years. This surprises me. I think it's a turn of events to not see the Utah governor as a very strong figure in state politics. And my history would tell me that I'll call it the executive branch, but meaning the governor's part of the executive branch, was very strong in the Leavitt years. And then it just started a diminution of it since then. Your comments.
I think it depends on who the governor is and what the cycle is, what's going on. And so, when you're a first year governor coming in, you're still trying to get your feet underneath you and other things like that.
Yeah.
And so I've seen some years where clearly legislative leadership, Speaker of the House or President of the Senate, were much more powerful, and other years where clearly the governor was much more powerful. I mean, Mike Leavitt in the latter part of his years as governor really knew how to wield power as governor, mm-hmm, and push back against the legislature and to drive a certain agenda.
I'm obviously a partisan here, very close to Mike Leavitt, but you know, he has incredible leadership skills. And, you know, leaders know how to unify people behind, you know, aspirational or, you know, noble goals and go charge after it.
And spend their political capital.
Uh-huh. To do it.
Mm-hmm. To do it. And weaker governors cede power. Shereen?
Well, okay, but also our legislatures changed some rules to give themselves more power along the way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
So I would say that, you know, it may be driven by, you know, particular leaders and their styles, but also by a changing attitude towards what kinds of power they should have. For example, just the last in the last session, the ability to call yourself back into session whenever you want.
Huge shift of power.
Huge
there.
Shift.
Shereen, let's go to you on this. We did see some legislative power being exerted on something that many would think is unfortunate. Governor Cox appointed a Democratic physician to the Utah Air Quality Board, and GOP lawmakers said no.
So so Suzanne Harrison, who is used to be a representative in the House, is now an at-large member of the Salt Lake County Council. And she honestly has such an incredible record of leadership on air quality. She has gotten bipartisan legislation passed on this. It's an issue she's been working on closely. As a physician, as a person who is in the medical field, she certainly understands and sees the direct impacts that bad, you know, air has on our health. And she's done a lot of work in this space. She was appointed, which I think kudos, to replace Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall, whose term has expired. And the Senate Republicans voted no. They voted her down. And I just have to say that this reads to me, it smacks of, you know, plain politics. I think that you would want the best qualified people for the job who are really doing work in this area. She certainly is that.
John, what's your read on this?
One of my questions is, I mean, clearly I know former Representative Harrison. She's very smart, articulate, hardworking, and my understanding is a great doctor. I sit here and I look at this, and part of the job of the governor and the governor's staff is to pick folks and get them through that confirmation process. And so it makes me wonder, what were the dynamics leading up to not understanding the lay of the land or not adequately helping their nominee get through the process? Clearly, I think, as I understand, various Republicans are concerned with how she might leverage this platform to drive a certain agenda, which causes them concern.
But the agenda of clean air.
But this is...
It's terrifying.
Depending on the nature of how you deal with it and stuff like that. But this is one of those things when you talk about the power of the legislature versus the power of the governor. You know, I don't know the behind-the-scenes dynamic, but that's one of those things that would imply that in this case, the legislature exerted much more power than the governor did in this process.
I don't know this issue well. I do know Suzanne Harrison, have a lot of respect for her. I believe she's an anesthesiologist.
Yes.
Yeah. My recollection is that she was in the Senate and got gerrymandered.
She did.
Well, she was a House member, and so...
Oh, she was House.
Her and Jeff Stenquist were combined into the same House district as part of redistricting.
So she runs and is elected in the county council. And now the legislature is, you know, saying no to a pretty important board assignment. They used to have Aaron Mendenhall, who was obviously aligned on air quality in this way. This feels particularly mean to me. I wouldn't, you know.
That's why I'm not sure what were the behind-the-scenes dynamics at play.
Mm-hmm. Political retribution. Yeah. Anyway, let's go.
John and Shereen, wow, we're sitting out there with, you know, over a foot of snow, depending on where you are.
We just went through the biggest snowstorm I think I've seen at my house this whole season.
Interesting.
Was just the past few days.
I find, you know, I heard a report that we're going to go from below freezing to 70 degrees in 5 days.
Spring is here.
We're going to have localized flooding.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
What are your comments on it? What should we share with listeners here?
Well, for those listeners that are new to Utah, our water is in the mountains, and so we always monitor how quickly do we warm up? Do we warm up slow enough that it melts at a reasonable pace and stuff like that? But I think we're going to have spots. But as I see the weather report and I listen to the weather forecasters, they talk about, we're going to warm up for a day, and then we're going to cool back down.
And that would
and
be
that
perfect,
will help
right?
mitigate
the
flooding.
They need it to go in little steps. I am a skier. It's unbelievable, you know, what you see up there in the mountains.
I saw pictures of ski lifts buried in the snow with a chair stuck in the snow.
I've been at both Alta and Deer Valley recently, but you're on the lift and you'll go through whole sections of the mountain that they've had to cordon off below you because your skis would hit people because the base has come up so high.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I just want people to know that there are a number of resources for Sandbank Fill Station. So if you've got some time, you could volunteer from Cache County to Salt Lake County Public Works all around. If you just search, you know, Salt Lake, Utah sandbags, you can find locations where you can both pick them up and volunteer to fill them. Could be a fun activity with the family. It's supposed to be 70 degrees this weekend, and we're going
to
need them.
Be ready to help your neighbor, and I would encourage people to look up FEMA flood maps, and you can see whether you're in a floodplain or not, and then you can see if your neighbors are or you're not, and be prepared to go out and help. That's the Utah way.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great program. So happy to be with my friends John Dougal and Shereen Gorbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everyone, for listening.